All right, everybody. Hello and welcome back to In Liberty and Health. This morning, I would have done a Sunday coffee podcast, but my guest today was very, very generous with his time and availability that he was able to come on tonight to talk about absolutely nothing. Excuse me. There's absolutely nothing going on in the world right now. So who knows what we're going to talk about today? Unfortunately, no new Common Crown stuff. Jazz's dog had passed away this past weekend, very, very unfortunately. So we weren't able to go back into the studio and I wasn't able to finish up my guitar parts. We're going to reschedule. That's all good, though. No big deal there. I can't, you know, no harm, no foul, obviously. Thank you to everybody who wished me a happy Father's Day. The wife and I are 8 weeks away from meeting our little girl. So if you would be so generous, please make sure you like, subscribe, share, and if you're feeling extra generous, become a channel member or leave a super chat. Really, really appreciate it. Goes a long way and also, you know, tells people that this channel is good and that you like what I'm doing here. So, I'm kidding about earlier, nothing to talk about. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Israel and Iran. Very, very interesting. Thank you so much, Eddie. I really appreciate that, brother. I had a lot of people wish me Happy Father's Day, so it's pretty weird for me, but I couldn't be happier. So before we get to the rest of today's show, guys, please make sure you go to all the links below where you could find my guest, everything he's got going on, all my links, all the stuff I got going on, Tiger Fitness through the link below to get the supplements to get you all jacked and tan. Use some of this morning. I use the Ambrosia Collective. I think it's the pineapple mango branched chain amino acids at the gym. A little bit of a rough day at the gym. Didn't sleep very well, but that's going to be all right. What else did I want to say? Fox Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout, and of course, Deem Fit through the link below. And without further ado, guys, let's talk about if the whole world's going to be nuclearly annihilated because of Israel.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, everybody. Hello, and welcome back to In Liberty and Health. And I'm very, very grateful today. It's been way too long, but my dear friend, Connor Freeman with me. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing fantastic, Kyle. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course. No, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I think you've probably been one of the more featured guests on the show. And as I told you beforehand, I think it's been over 100 episodes since you've been on, which to me, just it's all gone in the blink of an eye. So for me, that's way too long to go without having you on. So I'm glad that you're here today, man. And of course, as I said in the introduction, we have absolutely nothing to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, actually, I am curious to see the outcome of the talks in Oman. I know Witkoff is on his way there to meet with Abbas Araghchi, and this will be the sixth round of talks. So I think if they can just ink the deal and Trump can keep the Israelis at bay, we might. Oh, wait. That's not going to happen. Yeah. I think those talks have been canceled at this point.
Yeah, exactly. why don't we kind of rewind back? I had Gordon McGill on to talk about trucking on Thursday night. And of course, he's not a foreign policy guy at all, a domestic, you know, trucker. So we talked about trucking and stuff like that. And I'm sitting there like, I'm going to be respectful. And not that I wouldn't, you know, I'm sure he probably has some thoughts on that kind of stuff too. But like, we're blue collar guys. This is what we're going to talk about tonight. Tom Luongo on Wednesday night, who's a little bit more pro Trump than I am, but I appreciate his perspective. And then I was thinking all throughout the week, I'm like, okay, well, actually it's good to have you here because we can kind of look back on what's happened in the last couple of days. Dust has settled a little bit from the initial actions, but let's rewind to when Trump officially got put back into office back in January and kind of get a little bit of a timeline on that up until now. So what do you think about ever since Trump got back in January and how the talks had kind of gone?
Well, essentially, Trump ran on escalating with Iran. There was one moment, you know, and I don't remember who the reporter was, but it gave me a smidgen of hope, where he was asked, you know, would you make a deal with Tehran over their nuclear energy program, or their nuclear program, as it's usually just referred to? And he goes, yeah, why not? He goes, it's just, we could make a deal. I am great at deals. The only thing is they can't be allowed to make a nuclear weapon, mm-hmm. which indicated to me that, you know, we were talking before the show about it's sometimes difficult in this world to determine who's malevolent and cynical, who's malevolent and stupid, and who's just stupid. And sometimes Trump is the hardest one to figure out. Although at this point, I'm just by default going to say he's malevolent and cynical. Mm-hmm. But he, at that time, seemed to me like, oh, wow, though maybe there's something that could be done, and he's just playing hardball. However, the rest of his campaign was he, in this video Michael Tracy was sharing around immediately after the bomb started going off in Iran Thursday night when Israel started the war. You know, there were moments on the campaign trail where Trump was giving a speech and saying, you know, Biden says he's not going to allow Israel to, he says that Israel can bomb Iran, but not the nuclear sites. And he goes, well, why wouldn't you bomb the nuclear sites? That's the thing you want to hit. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm. So his position was, you know, let's blow up the Iranian civilian, the internationally safeguarded civilian nuclear energy program, which could lead to enormous environmental catastrophes that we can't even really fathom. And that will occur if the U.S. goes in there with like 30,000-pound bombs and hits Fordo, as we're seeing the Fordo enrichment plant, which is deep underground, being suggested in the Israel, in the media anyway, that Israel is presenting this to Trump. They're also saying that they're presenting to him plans to assassinate Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like they want a regime change war. And there's really, we can fast forward just briefly back to 15.
Yeah,
this has been essentially Trump's project for 10 years. I mean, he owns this war. I always said, anytime I was on this show, that Biden had escalated with Iran well beyond what Trump left him, same way he did with Russia, China, the Palestinians, et cetera. However, Trump really owns this. There was the JCPOA was a great deal. It was signed by the US, Russia, China, the E3, plus Germany, this is Germany, Britain, and France. And you had the most comprehensive and intrusive nuclear energy program inspections ever implemented by the IAEA in history. And they were verified to be in compliance over 10 times before Trump destroyed the deal. He didn't destroy it. Technically, everybody else is still in it, ironically. Mm-hmm. We illegally and unilaterally exited the deal in May of 2018 at Benjamin Netanyahu's behest. So the point of that, the reason why Trump did that, because the Iranians have been verifiably not making nuclear weapons as a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty with a safeguarded nuclear program for over half a century. And so the reason why they ended the deal was because it took war off the table. Most people, because of how corrupt our media is, don't know about the NPT and the IAEA inspections mm-hmm. and the history of Iran's nuclear program. So they just assume that the problem with the deal in terms of the optics is it's too obvious that they're not building a nuclear weapon. You can't sell a war, you know, because no one really cares about regime change with Iran, like unless you're a real hawk and you have a vested interest in this and you care, you're Israel first, not America first, right? Like that's why they had to tell us with Saddam, he's got WMD. He's got weapons of mass destruction, and he's going to launch an anthrax attack on the Americans with Al-Qaeda and all these lies. So, and he was involved in 9/11 and all this. And that's kind of the same shtick they do with Iran, right? They're the world's greatest sponsor of terrorism. Every terrorist attack you've ever heard of, America, is Iran is responsible. They're trying to kill the president.
Well, you cannot forget, because I've seen this so many times, they chant death to America.
Okay. Yeah.
Every single time. And?
Right. I don't know. It's so funny that, I was just saying on Twitter because Bannon had Michael Flynn on his show. Mm-hmm. And it is hilarious how the propaganda is just like the propaganda about Palestine. It's just slogans. And like when you watch the Piers Morgan show, the great thing about it is these Zionists are stupid enough to keep coming back for more abuse, because here they are, they're talking to somebody who, even like the people from the Young Turks, who really aren't with us on any other issue, I don't think. They're good enough to smack these people around in public, because they actually have arguments and information and evidence and proof, and they clearly have empathy for human beings. They're not, you know, modern day Nazis like most of the Zionist, you know, pro-genocide spokesmen are. And so anybody looking at it can just see, okay, here's someone who's like got some serious humanity, and they've got a real argument, evidence, and historical context to put this situation in, and they can inform us, and then we can make our own decision. The other side condemns you, even in the audience by extension, that you're an anti-Semite, and here's three slogans from Frank Luntz's dictionary, World Dictionary on Israel, that I can just pound into your head, and you're just going to have to accept it. Right. And but that it's failing so badly that they've resorted to just, I mean, we even saw it under Biden too, right? It's you have to criminalize dissent, as they did on the college campuses. And as usual, I just want to say thank you to all those people for doing that. They put their ass on the line. But so now, you know, we're deporting people for writing op-eds, and the police state is getting stronger and stronger in the name of combating anti-Semitism, which this isn't anti-Semitism, and it's not anti-Jewish either. It's, you know, so much of the organizing groups in those protests are like Jewish Voice for Peace. Code Pink never quit this beat. And also you have If Not Now. So these are Jewish groups, and they're the ones doing the organizing primarily. And so, you know, it's such a lie to say, oh, the Jewish students feel unsafe. And Trump was such a champion of that narrative. And then connected to that was the Iran demonization. And so once he gets in, he escalates the policies under Biden vis-a-vis the axis of resistance, which essentially means he was taking the side, as per usual with our government in our lifetime anyway, where our coalition is Israel and Al-Qaeda and now ISIS, as you can see even in Gaza now. So that's what he launched the war in Yemen. Expanded a new war in Yemen, totally illegally. They didn't even bother to propagandize the American people about that, which is fascinating. Most of the bitching about it in the press was about Signalgate, but they didn't even bother, which is really fascinating, right? Because the attitude is, what are you going to do about it? And so they didn't even bother. They started bombing the poorest country in the Middle East as more or less a demonstration to Iran leading up to the beginning of these talks mediated by Muscat, the Omanis, which began in April, which are now ruined. But, you know, it was showing, look what we can do. We can bomb the shit out of a very weak country, a paralyzed third world country under blockade, and which we've inflicted genocide on for year after year since 2015. And the Houthis are very brave in resisting all of this. And, you know, they just framed it as they're random, you know, they're attacking international shipping, and it's bad for the economy. And really, it was on its face another war for Israel, right?
Right.
So then the talks begin. And at first, it seems like, well, maybe they will make a deal, because a lot of people in our scene rightfully know the history of Bush even saying, basically turning the Israelis, you know, telling the Israelis, no, I'm not going to launch a war on Iran for you. And the Pentagon telling Cheney and Bush, no, we're not doing this. We are not sacrificing this enormous number of troops and picking a fight we cannot win with Iran right now. And I thought that that would hold for a while. But unfortunately, you know, yeah, I hate to sound like Obama, but the Trump administration is really like the JV team. And we've only gotten more incompetent as time has gone on. And, you know, I mean, really, we've discussed ad nauseum the animating objective of the entire military establishment now is war with China. Right. So these people are insane. They're willing to fight a nuclear power. At least they are willing to spend trillions of dollars preparing for one and threatening to do one and provoking conflict with China. But with Iran, you figure, out of the four main countries we're at war with, in terms of a direct war, it's probably the most likely, since Pyongyang, Moscow, and Beijing all have nuclear weapons.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because I was reading an article. I threw up a tweet earlier today because there's so many slop accounts sharing that, oh my God, Trump's really sticking it to the Israelis. I'm like, I'm not sure I'm buying that. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. And Kyle had messaged me and sent me over an article saying that basically when Israel asked the U.S. to join in on the war, the U.S. rejected it. And they cited actually Elbridge Colby in one of these. I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. And credit where it's due and credit where it's not due. Elbridge Colby, in the article, the people said, oh yeah, he doesn't want to fight a war with Iran because he's so focused on China. So there's like this division of labor in the White House right now. And really, I think the only reason why there might be any restraint is just because the U.S. realizes, like, oh, we got our ass handed to us by the Yemenis. Like, I think it cost the U.S., what was it, like $30 billion to fight the Yemenis when they were just over the course of like a month or two. And, you know, basically Trump came out of that and said, oh, yeah, we made a deal, even though there was just like some, wasn't it like some light talks through Oman or something like that? And they're like, all right, yeah, we'll leave you guys alone and we'll leave Israel alone. We'll you know, you guys can keep attacking Israel, but like, we're not going to bomb you anymore because it's costing us too much money. Okay, so if you can't beat the Yemenis, the poorest country in the Middle East, you really think you can step up and stick it in Iran's face? And then, you know, now, like you said, Pyongyang, Moscow and Beijing, like, you think you're gonna go swinging in Beijing's backyard? As you had Pete Hegseth over in what the fuck was it, Taiwan or South Korea, saying that, oh, we have to strategically defend Taiwan. Motherfucker, you got your ass whooped by Yemen and you think you can pick a fight with China? But come on, yeah, dude, be real.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Hegseth, again, he's a perfect example of the level, yeah, of incompetence. And I will just say, you know, the transparent disregard for the safety and lives of American forces, right, across the Middle East is an impeachable offense. Mm-hmm. The fact that they effectively psyop the American people into believing that these negotiations with Iran were legitimate. They weren't just psyoping Tehran to lull, yeah, them into believing an attack wasn't imminent, so that they could get the drop on them. They, so the Israelis could anyway. They did it to us. And I'm livid about that right now. And, you know, I mean, this guy, I know that people were in our scene were happy to see Hegseth supports defend the guard. But man, he's already launched at least one unconstitutional war, mm-hmm, this year. And I would argue by effectively two now, and we're all the ones we're already involved in are unconstitutional. So he doesn't seem to really care about the troops, the Constitution, or the law. Right. And so, you know, and of course he's, you know, this is par for the course. Lloyd Austin was the same way when it came to China. And really, this is, we've had three consecutive Israeli first administrations. Biden for sure, and Trump both times. And again, so much of what went wrong under Biden was a result of the mess Trump left when he exited the office. And he had tore up the Iran nuclear deal, as we said, and ramped up the sanctions, allowed Israel to carry out a myriad of sabotage attacks on their nuclear program, as well as assassinations, most notably of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh at the end of 2020. And in the beginning of 2020, at the behest of the Israelis, we assassinated General Qasem Soleimani, who led effectively the war against ISIS, which they love to conflate these groups in the media, and Trump does the same thing. I got Baghdadi and I got Soleimani. Well, that's not a coherent policy. And it really, what it looks like is you're just, because you killed Baghdadi, great. We killed bin Laden too. Doesn't mean we're not still arming Al-Qaeda and Israel isn't still arming Al-Qaeda and ISIS. You know, we're tied at the hip with them, and we've allowed them to seize control of Damascus. And the Trump administration has only increased ties with Jilani and his Hayat Tahrir al-Sham regime. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, it's all Israel first. He's been ramping up the genocide in Gaza, and so all of this in the background, and of course the escalations of the West Bank. I just assume that if we were going to go to war with Iran, the same way that if we were going to go to this brink of nuclear annihilation and launch a proxy war against Russia on their doorstep in Ukraine. Like, Biden's the one dumb enough to do the latter.
Right.
Trump is the one stupid and reckless enough to do the former. And
Real quick, I want to touch on the Syria part, because remember everyone made a big hubbub about, Trump pulled the CIA out of Syria and he wanted to quit funding them. Okay, but like, he still bombed them. And, you know, everyone said, oh, Assad gassed his own people. That was such propaganda. Okay, well, Trump followed that propaganda too, because that's part of the reason why he bombed Syria. And then now that Jelani took over, it's essentially an Israeli proxy, because notice ISIS never fucks with Israel. And they're not fucking with Israel right now, even though they've bombed the Aleppo airport how many fucking times? And then other parts of Syria, and, you know, the U.S. is still occupying parts of Syria. So, like,
they've launched hundreds and hundreds of strikes on Syria and occupied Syrian territory in the south since Jelani took power. Mm-hmm. And just about ISIS, you guys can all Google this. Great thing to share with the family on Father's Day. The one time ISIS attacked Israel by accident near the Golan Heights during the worst parts of the dirty war in Syria, they apologized to Tel Aviv. That's real. That's 100% real. And it comes from a former Israeli defense minister. You can look it up in Newsweek if you want. And there are proxy forces. There are Israeli proxy forces. I'm not saying that some of the elements don't go rogue from time to time, but that's historically been the case.
Hold on. Sorry.
Sure.
I literally found it. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Hold on. Sorry.
Yeah. See?
I can't believe that. Jesus. Yeah. ISIS fighters regret attacking Israel and have apologized, former defense minister says.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah. The fighters loyal to the Islamic State militant group ISIS have apologized for launching an attack on Israeli forces last year in the disputed Golan Heights region, according to Israel's former defense minister. Holy crap. Jesus, you want to talk about nailing the coffin of the idea of being ISIS, like, completely under CIA control and like a total proxy for the U.S. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine a better one than that. Jesus.
Yep. And Al-Qaeda's never attacked Israel either. They did kill Rabbi Meir Kahane in New York City in, I believe, 1990. Mm-hmm. And he's essentially the forefather of the men running the Israeli government today, who in Israel, they're called Kahanis, whether they're in the Jewish Power Party or the Religious Zionism Party, personified by Bezalel Smotrich, the finance minister and effective occupation governor of the West Bank, and national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. Kahane's original party has been banned in Israel for being a terrorist organization. But his legacy lives on. But to my knowledge, that's the only real Al-Qaeda attack ever on Israel. Now, bin Laden and Zawahiri were vehemently anti-Israel, but it just hasn't materialized into, you know, they're much more comfortable attacking the Shiite enemies of Israel on the axis of resistance. And, you know, again, that's the other thing. Netanyahu he claimed the Al-Qaeda takeover of Syria as a victory because he goes, we decimated Hezbollah, which is pretty much true, with U.S. support, and they were not able to backstop the Assad regime and protect them when they were overrun by Al-Qaeda. And so he viewed this, and of course, the American sanctions, which Biden bragged about, I gave Israel greater freedom of action than anyone before to bomb wherever they wanted in Syria. So they all claimed victory for this and said it was basically something to cheer on. And, you know, so again, they are, everything is, in this era anyway, the masks are all off. And, and it's one of the things that's beneficial, because right now, you know, in this horrible situation we're in, where it looks like, according to, the story at the top of antiwar.com today, Dave DeCamp wrote up, Scott Horton, editorial director of antiwar.com and the director of the Institute, the Libertarian Institute, has sources who know, who apparently understand that the Washington is going to directly intervene and join in the airstrikes with Israel against Iran, and that it could happen as soon as Monday. And so we're in this position now where the America First base has to reject this. Oh yeah, of course, Steve Bannon is saying it's propaganda. Yeah, Israeli propaganda, I'm sure. Meanwhile, he's on with General Flynn talking about how Mr. Iran's on notice, talking about how they're racing for a nuclear bomb, Holocaust, big Satan, little Satan, death to America, death to Israel. So he's the one doing Israeli propaganda. And I don't remember if he was there at the founding of Breitbart, but Breitbart was founded in Israel with the goal of making the American right wing more Zionist.
Okay, well, yeah, also the thing to remember about Steve Bannon, he was on the boat going to retrieve the hostages back in, 1969? I can't remember. I'm sure you probably remember better than I do, but he was on the boat to go retrieve the hostages that Iran had taken, and he was also at Nixon's inauguration. Steve Bannon glows quite a bit, and, you know, he has this amazing ability when it comes to populist analysis of domestic policy to be spot on. But then when it comes to foreign policy, he always falls into that fucking pivot to Asia and Iran, you know, that he falls right into the two worst positions you could possibly have. That's also the Washington consensus. We need to fight a war with China and we need to fight a war with Iran. You know, we can't get bogged down in Russia. Russia's a paper tiger, despite the fact that China's pretty much a paper tiger, too. And they have no interest in fighting a war with the U.S. The U.S. is interested in fighting a war with them. He always ends up carrying that line. So it's funny. It's so frustrating. And I know you share this frustration as well, that nobody pins responsibility on any of this on Trump or his cabinet. Yes, these people are responsible for what's going on right now. And there's either there's two ways you have to look at this. Either, and we could even take this back to the attempt on Putin's life. Either they knew about it and they're lying to the public, or they didn't know about it. Either way, it shows complete and total incompetence or absolute malice on their part. And same deal with the strike on Iran. You ain't going to convince me that Mike Waltz, who is working on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu and then just got demoted, quote unquote, to a different position, but still maintains a high powerful position in the Trump administration, and they threw out all the good anti-war people, Daniel Davis. I know there's one other person who worked underneath Elbridge Colby that was actually pretty good. Dave DeCamp himself had recommended some of these guys. They threw those guys out, right? The guys who are in high positions that are total batshit crazy Zionists, they never went anywhere, right? People can say whatever they want, but they're still in the Trump administration. So either they knew about these strikes on Iran and let them happen, which that's kind of what I think, because there's been enough reports out now saying that we basically lulled the Iranians into a false sense of complacency so that way Israel could go stab them in the back. Or they legitimately didn't know about it, and Trump was completely, totally feckless to stop Netanyahu from kicking off what could be potentially the most disastrous war we've seen in, you know, human history.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, as we've been discussing for years now, there's clearly a division of labor in terms of the hawks, and it goes from Congress to the media to everywhere, to the executive branch and the military. We have certain people that are tasked with China, or China and Iran, or they're tasked with Russia, or they're tasked with going after the Palestinians. And we could see it because, some of these examples are old, but Ilhan Omar, who I would like to support on some things, if I'm being honest with you, when it comes to the Israeli stuff, she was vehemently opposed to Trump's feigned withdrawal from Syria in the first term. She said, and this is great, one of my favorite lines of all time, it would be a gift to Russia, Iran, and ISIS. That's a great bit. So she was like that. And Bernie, of course, has always been a shill for the military-industrial complex. Yes. He has a history of arresting anti-war protesters. He's never, to my knowledge, met a war he wasn't willing to fund or support. He has some rhetorical concessions he can throw out to the base, but come on, he does what he's told at the end of the day, happily. And, Trump is probably the best example. He ran on In 15, he was in 16, he was speaking out of both sides of his mouth. I'm going to bomb the shit out of ISIS and kill their families. We need to end the endless wars. I'm going to tear up the Iran nuclear deal. It was the worst deal ever in history. Israel is our greatest ally. I'm going to bring back torture. I'm going to expand the surveillance state. End the endless wars. America first. You know, so at some, you know, and really, I've had some great conversations with MAGA people, friends of mine. And the one thing I've noticed is, you know, it, I've had some very good conversations with them about foreign policy. But what I've noticed is if you lay out, you know, all the evidence you want for how he's been a hawk, and I can go through the list, the record number of bombs dropped on Yemen, Afghanistan, and Somalia, tearing up the Iran nuclear deal, backing, you know, escalations in the West Bank, expanding settlements, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, continuing to bomb and indefinitely occupy Syria, worsening the sanctions regime on Syria, you know, doubling down in Afghanistan and surging in Afghanistan before he made the deal with Zalmay Khalilzad and the Taliban. But even then, he still didn't pull the troops out. He didn't pull the troops out of Iraq either. He just moved the troops from Somalia to Djibouti and Kenya, and then Biden put them right back in and drastically expanded the Asia pivot Obama's build up for war with China, which is the largest undertaking of such undertaking since the Second World War. So, and also, you know, tore up critical nuclear arms treaties with Russia, set records for the number of sanctions he imposed on Russia, set records for the number of diplomats he expelled, Russian diplomats he expelled from the United States. Right. So all these things, escalating in Ukraine, arming the Ukraine, Kiev and the Nazis there to, wage war on the ethnic Russian separatists in the Donbass. I still don't think we know how many people were actually killed during that period. But it's at least in the thousands, over 10,000. So all this to say, we know who he is, but if you lay all that out and this shit he's done since he came into office now, the response I've gotten is, well, he didn't start any new wars. I even left out Venezuela killing tens of thousands of people with the sanctions and attempting to.
Right.
And he goes, that people will say to me, I had a great conversation with this guy who was in special forces at a bar recently. And he said, he goes, well, Trump did all of that because he doesn't want to start any new wars and he wants peace. That's why he does these things, because the other side is intransigent and they're not willing to compromise and make a deal. He just wants to make deals. That's who he is. He's a deal maker. And part of the whole thing about Witkoff, too, is that he's this great deal maker. I mean, even Tucker was, you know, it was almost insufferable. I like Tucker, but, you know, there's a part of me that's always like, not sure.
Yeah.
For no, a lot of reasons.
I totally get it. Cause he said, Tucker, I almost feel like him the same way I feel about Steve Bannon. We're like, Tucker is right about a lot of stuff and I will cheer him on. But, you know, same deal. He's been one of the worst propagandists for the Cold War with China. And it seems like he's kind of rolled that stuff back. And I kind of want to give some credit to Jeffrey Sachs for that, because, you know, Jeffrey Sachs is far from perfect. But like when it comes to foreign policy stuff, I think he's pretty spot on. And
he got Tucker to oppose the Asia pivot on the most recent one. It's
awesome. Okay, no, I didn't. I haven't watched the most recent one, but yeah, like same deal. I'm like sometimes I'm like, I don't know about this Tucker. Like I always maintain a little bit of skepticism about him, and maybe it's just because I'm like too much of a Spurg. But it's like, okay, well, your dad was CIA, Alex Jones too, right? Like he'll say, oh, Steve Witkoff is touched by the hand of God.
That's what I was referring
speaking
to.
Through God, and I'm like, okay, all right, man.
Well, there's, Tucker's whatever. Father was vice chairman of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, the most powerful anti-Iran think tank in the Beltway. They're essentially an Israeli outpost. There's some great reporting about that on Responsible.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, I just remembered how many times he said, I've gone on vacation to Israel. I love Israel. Nothing is better than a lunch in Tel Aviv. And nobody's like, what the fuck did he just say?
Yeah.
Like nobody stops and like he's right about a lot of stuff. And I are not arguing that, but like no one's going to be like, wait, you're like vacationing in Tel Aviv. And then the whole episode with Thomas Massey where he played dumb about AIPAC. I'm like,
Well, he's just a character, right? Because, I mean, he said, what was the thing he said? He goes, I've lived in D.C. my whole life and been a part of the establishment. I just never knew that the CIA was like a malevolent force in the world.
You know why that is? Because they're signing his paycheck.
I know what you mean. And also, you know, here's the thing. The reason why I'm a little bit skeptical of like this, I'll just say, this is my opinion. I'm not representing the Institute when I say this, or antiwar.com. My sort of crackpot theory, I'm a hopeless cynic. The whole epic battle on the right wing now between these big personalities, there's that great piece in Politico that came out early this week, the day before the war started. And we're seeing more and more of this like cat fight between Tucker and Mark Levin. Given Tucker's his history of being an Iran hawk and a pro-Israel pundit, and his association with neoconservatives over the years and his father's role at FDD, the talk about Witkoff being a saint touched by the hand of God and all this, it's a little weird to talk about a mere mortal that way. And
yeah,
Witkoff has not succeeded in any of these negotiations, of them. He has not. In fact, his statement on the eve of the war here this week was, I love Netanyahu, but Trump could be the prime minister of Israel a standing ovation, basically, at this Israel lobby award show, whatever the hell it was. The guy had to know at the time what was coming the next day. And I agree with you, man, a legitimate scholar. I think we should, I support BDS without qualification at this point. Here's the problem. I think it's very possible that this big fight we're seeing is a sort of domestic ancillary to the overall PSYOP they pulled on Tehran, lulling them into believing that an attack was not imminent. Because I do believe Trump has made up his mind. He said as much. You know, I don't know if you saw this piece. It's up on antiwar.com, but at the New York Post, there was this story where he's bragging about how I knew the attack was coming. I knew the day. I knew the date. I always knew the date. It was. I gave him a 60-day deadline, which was not made public. It was reported in Israeli media, but now he's saying it was real. And he goes, and I knew they were going to bomb him on the 61st day. And so he was complicit. We have all this reporting from Axios about how he and Netanyahu and their men conspired to do this public fight. Like even on Monday this week, Trump held a phone call with Netanyahu and told him, I'm really close to making a deal. I don't want you to attack Israel. So stop it, okay, BB, because we're doing negotiations now. And it's now come out, at least in the, we've had multiple Israeli officials say at least. And again, Trump's actions and statements confirm this, that they absolutely knew. In fact, they had discussed the attack on Iran is what is being said. So he knew what was going to happen. And he always knew the date, apparently. They provided, quote-unquote, exquisite intelligence to support the attack. I don't know if we were doing any refueling yet, but that was what it was even being reported in on the eve of the strikes, that the discussions with U.S. officials was, what's the bare minimum level of support we could give Israel, probably intelligence and refueling support. Because that's frankly what they need. Also, they are going to need the U.S. to go in if the true intent here is to blow up the nuclear facilities, because Israel does not have the capability to do that. Also, they're going to need refueling support anyway, because they can't land in Gulf states in the midst of a prolonged war.
Yeah, it seems like Germany was helping in some of the refueling of Israel's jets. I think I said it in our one group chat, but they had sent that out real quick. Everybody, please make sure you like the video. I'd really, really appreciate that. And Sam, Israel should be treated the exact same economically until their nuclear programs is dismantled. They're a rabid dog with a nuke. And yeah, I mean, honestly, when you consider the way that Israel's acted over the last, 2 years, really, and I mean, you can go back further than that, but like specifically all the belligerence over the last couple of years, I don't know how it isn't like the mainstream position, like, we can't have Israel having nukes because they're too insane. They're probably the most likely to just fly off the handle and use it. And especially if Trump shows any restraint here, I could see Israel just saying, all right, well, you know what, if you guys won't, take Tehran off the face of the map, we're sorry we have to do it for the existence of our state. And I know it's like a little bit of a meme, but there's legitimate things about it. The whole curse of the eighth decade. Well, Israel's coming up on their eighth decade, and you know, the certain group of people never really makes it past an eight decades in any one specific place. So I think they're kind of, I know it's a joke, but like, they may look at this as a legitimate threat to their existence, especially when you're getting, you know, Syria's kind of taken care of now, but like, you have Hezbollah and you have Hamas, even though I think Hamas is still doing pretty rough, but they're still trying to take care of that. But now that you launch a war with Iran, you know, Iran has always been characterized. I know we've talked about this a million times, but Iran's always been characterized by great, great, great restraint. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, because they, you know, they've started throwing, you know, bombs to Tel Aviv. And I think it was Pete Quinones that had pointed this out before, but it's so funny that they always say Hamas and Iran and, you know, all the Muslims use human shields. Do you know where the Mossad headquarters are located? Right in the middle of Tel Aviv in a residential neighborhood.
Yep.
Who's using human shields now? Oh, and what do they do with the Palestinians when they're near a minefield? Hey, put this around your neck real quick and go walk through those minefields. If you can come back, then we'll shoot you in the back. But if you don't make it, well, looks like we knew there was a bomb there.
Yep.
Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, and you know, you can already see, I think it was Kevin McCarthy on Twitter, we've seen a lot of hawks point to show videos of that strike and say, Israel, you know, Iran is bombing civilians. Look at how barbaric they are. But again, like you said, the military targets, the intelligence targets, are embedded in densely populated civilian areas by design. So we have to push back on that. I did not expect Iran to, I felt like they were painted into a corner where they would have to escalate beyond any level they ever have at this point. You know, the strikes in April after Israel bombed the Iranian consulate in Damascus on April 1st, 2024, their counterattack was very restrained and calculated to not escalate to all-out war. And same deal with the October strikes after a myriad of assassinations, including of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, the political bureau chief of Hamas, who's a diplomat, and then also of Hassan Nasrallah and other figures. They responded in the same sort of way, where it's calculated to not escalate to all-out war, and they were hitting strictly military sites and not the ones you're talking about in the civilian areas. So now they're put into a corner where they may weaponize their nuclear program. Now they mastered the fuel cycle 20 years ago. They had enriched uranium up to 60% in opposition to Israeli assassinations, countless Israeli assassinations really throughout their country, of nuclear scientists, military figures, engineers, drone strikes on military sites, sabotage of their nuclear program. They increased their uranium enrichment of uranium hexafluoride to 60%, which the only reason that stockpile keeps growing again is, one, because they need leverage for talks, and because of the sanctions that America has imposed, they're not allowed to export the uranium to France to have it converted into fuel for their energy program. Now, the 20% uranium tetrafluoride that they've been making since the assassination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, which was demanded by the parliament, he was one of their top nuclear scientists, is actually used for nuclear medicine purposes. But nevertheless, it was a way of gaining leverage. Now, again, the deal, the JCPOA, only permitted enrichment up to 3.67% needed for the energy, for the electricity program. Now, or for the energy program. And so they were willing to do that again. That was the deal that they were trying to make with Trump. I mean, effectively, they would have just done the JCPOA and called it Trump's big, grand, big, beautiful deal. But he wasn't willing to accept that. And it's very clear at this point that they were not sincere about negotiations, that they wanted war with Iran. And he's the perfect guy to do this because, quite frankly, you know, it's interesting how, you know, certain presidents, if they went to war with certain countries, they could count on the support of their base. You know, the Republicans were not going to support Biden's war in Ukraine, and it was easy for them to oppose that. I'm glad they did. but they need to do the same thing here with Trump. The problem is, like, you know, military recruitment was going into the toilet under Biden and over the last several years, largely due to the absolute failures of the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, among others, that have cost America over $8 trillion and probably just as much in interest payments down the line, might even get worse than that, and killed something around 4.5 million people, according to Brown University's Cost of War project. And as you said, I think the war in Iran is going to be inevitably worse than that. But, you know, he is able to say, he, you know, he projects this faux masculinity and this nationalism when it's really all just Israel first and they're just being bullies. And he's getting, you know, if you want to take that tack and say he's not just totally complicit, he is getting walked like a dog by Netanyahu. And so, but nevertheless, the base really does love this stuff. Not the wars, but they love
the bravado,
his personality. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is the chance to do it. Also, they figured, you know, as we keep hearing, the argument is join now, because Hezbollah is in its most weakened state. Syria is, you know, is no longer a threat. Assad is gone. We're beating down the Houthis and Hamas. So, and, you know, the Shiite militias in Iraq and Syria can cause a lot of problems for the American troops there, but they can't get to Israel. At least it would be very difficult. You know, they'd have to go through Jordan probably and get bombed off the face of the earth. But they figure Iran is in this very weakened state. It's clearly not exactly the case right now. The strikes in Tel Aviv and throughout Israel are, you know, I mean, it's amazing to watch this. And quite frankly, as I said earlier, I mean, it's the Israeli population, as we just saw in this poll that came out, Howard's reported on 64% of the total population, which includes the 20% Palestinian Arab population, are treated like fourth class citizens. Of the total population, 64% believe, meaning the Israeli Jews, they believe there's no innocence in Gaza. Now they're crying and screaming in terror about the kinds of, not even really, but a fraction of the level of carnage being that they've inflicted on all these countries since October 7th and before then, of course. But they're hiding in their bomb shelters and crying and telling everybody to pray for them and asking America to sacrifice tens of thousands or more troops and young men for their, you know, Greater Israel project. And so that they can have this, you know, 100% total hegemony over the Middle East, finally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, you can kind of empathize with them because of how scary it would be to see bombs dropping and missiles dropping on your cities, but man, do something about it, you know, oppose it. But unfortunately, the country is just so propagandized and so Nazified that they, you know, they have a kind of death wish, frankly. And it's scary that the American government has this weird, like, mass murder suicide pact with Israel, where we're willing to, you know, this war will destroy America. There'll be no coming back. I have to imagine. I mean, we're already bankrupt. We have Trump saying, I'm going to have a $1 trillion military budget. And with these, you know, I really need to look more into this Palantir surveillance project that's coming on board soon. But, you know,
well, yeah, I know
we have very little liberty left and it's all going to be gone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you know about Palantir using their AI to target literal children in Gaza. I mean, it's called the Where's Daddy program, if I remember correctly.
And they're knee deep in Ukraine as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, Palantir, the PayPal mafia really is complicit in a lot of this. And, like, my opinion on a lot of this was that, like, the PayPal mafia was, at least I used to think this, I'm not sure I believe this anymore, but they were more of the benign influence on the Trump administration, out of considering all the influences, right? I'm not saying that they're necessarily good, but I'm saying compared to, like, the neoconservatives and the Israel lobby, at least the PayPal mafia is interested in business. But then you look more into it, you peel the curtain back a little bit, and it's like, okay, well, Starlink is all throughout Ukraine, right? That's how they get a lot of their targeting. So Elon's complicit right there. Zero motivation to end the war in Ukraine. And then, oh, well, then we get this minerals deal, which gets us even further tied into Ukraine. Like, there were so many people who were dead bought into, oh, Trump's going to end the war in 24 hours. I'm like, have you listened to him talk about how he's going to do that? Because first of all, it sounds like it doesn't have a fucking plan. Second of all, the world's way different than it was, you know, years ago. And then you also just didn't pay attention to his first administration, because I know you touched on this a little bit earlier, but the expelling of Russian diplomats, all the sanctions, I did a whole podcast on this of just, there's a really good link in that podcast where I don't remember the exact episode number, but it was what will Trump's Ukraine policy look like? And it listed out all the policies from, I think it was 2017 to 2019, just the absolute insanity under the first Trump administration for, you know, the way he was with Russia. So like, how did you think he was going to end that in 24 hours? And once again, mineral deal now. So it looks like this is going to go over to a frozen conflict where basically Ukraine is probably going to take somewhat of a backseat. They'll probably still get a little bit of funding, but there's not going to be this big old hubbub like there was under the Biden administration. It's just going to be like, ah, here's some missile systems, yeah, here's some tanks or something, some armaments, and now go the fuck away. We're focusing on Iran right now. Yeah. You know, like we said earlier, they're focused on China, and now there's war with Iran, which just, like you said, it's going to be a disaster. Like, the Iranians did not want this. None of these countries that we're trying to fight wars with, they don't want it. Russia no. just wants their sovereign territory respected. China says don't fuck with Taiwan. And Iran, really, they've done everything to try and get back into a deal. And Trump and Witkoff have just been all over the place. They'd say one day, oh, no enrichment. Oh, no, we'll allow enrichment. And then the next day, oh, no enrichment. And like, yeah. I don't know if this is just supposed to be, as they say, 5D chess, as in like, you don't know what they're going to say. So that way, if you say no enrichment, when you tell them, hey, you could have 3% enrichment, then you sound normal. But really, the net result of it has been Israel's now fighting a war with Iran. So
yeah.
What the fuck did these talks even do other than, once again, the net result of Khomeini is now lulled into a sense of complacency, and now they're ripe for the pickings. But, you know, I like I said, it's not the same world it was.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
That's 10 years ago. Iran's fighting back, and we'll see kind of how they keep going. So I guess the question I want to ask you now is, do you think Iran has the military capabilities to kind of keep up the barrage that they've been going against Israel? Or do you think eventually they're going to kind of run out and it's going to be a little bit tougher for them to keep going?
I am not exactly clear on the full breadth of their military, of their arsenal of ballistic missiles. Mm-hmm. I have read that U.S. estimates, and take that for what it's worth, please, sure, is that they have more than 2,000 ballistic missiles with 2,000-pound warheads, and that they just announced a new warhead they can attach to a ballistic missile that's got 4,000 pounds. It's a 4,000-pound munition. Mm-hmm. And they have a huge arsenal of missiles below the 2,000-pound threshold. So, but they're in a position where it's going to be difficult to replenish that. And they're using a lot of missiles right now. They're using a lot of drones to overwhelm the Iron Dome and other security systems we've paid for the Israelis to act with impunity in the region. But mainly that was designed to block out or to defend against these puny little bottle rockets that Hamas has in their concentration camp in Gaza. This is a very different situation as we can see today. I mean, just pull up Twitter and look at what's been going on over the last day. And so the problem is that they may be drawing Iran, they may be getting Iran to spend a lot of their arsenal. And as the U.S. prepares to go in there, it's going to be very difficult. And I don't know, quite frankly, to what extent China will get involved, or Russia for that matter. I don't think they're going to intervene directly. But they could provide some support and help them make more missiles. But I don't know how difficult that would be. So that remains to be seen. The Israelis, of course, do have somewhere between 80 and 300 nuclear warheads. And if you want to just call it what it is, the Americans have thousands more that they can unleash. And, you know, the the Israelis are also in a situation where they cannot fight Iran. They, as I said earlier, they don't have the bunker buster bombs. They don't have the resources to do, to go at this alone, and certainly not the troops. So we're going to have to see how it plays out. But the thing is that this can all really escalate very fast. You've got at least 50,000 troops throughout CENTCOM's area of operations. You know, we got the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. You got the Fifth Fleet stationed in Bahrain, and then troops in Kuwait. You got troops in some troops in Saudi, of course, Iraq and Syria, and all of Iran's allies at this point, if they get activated, can inflict serious damage on the American, and also like the drone attacks, the myriad of drone attacks we've seen the Shiite militias launch against U.S. forces illegally occupying the northeast of Syria over the years. That's not going to be the case. It's not going to be like that again. I mean, if Iran wants to attack them, you can really easily knock out dozens or hundreds of troops very quickly and very easily. So I don't know. We'll see. I need to do some more research on the relationship, the military relationship between China and Iran, to see what the potential is for them to be able to provide some military aid to Iran as this goes forward. But I would not underestimate the strength of Iran's military, but I would not underestimate Israel's willingness to set the entire region on fire. Essentially. And that's, I think, unfortunately, where we're headed. And there is, as we can see, no resistance on the part of either party in the United States right now. They're so locked in by the Israel lobby. And I don't know if it's blackmail or how much of it is blackmail, how much of it is money. But, you know, the American people are actually... So I think that one of the ways that could possibly help here, and I don't know if it could work or it could make things worse, there should maybe, there should probably be, if this escalates and you and the U.S. starts doing direct attacks on Iran, I would really hope that there's a strong contingent of the America First movement that says, that demands the impeachment of Trump for war crimes and for treason, because we've been betrayed here on behalf of a foreign country. It's very out in the open. This whole idea of telling the American people, I'm making a deal with Iran to prevent a war, to prevent World War III, and then to stab us in the back. You know, it's almost like the, you know, if you were to, let's say there was like a horrible pandemic that gets unleashed across the globe, and then you task the Pentagon working with Big Pharma to make vaccines and then remove legal liability for the companies and poison your own supporters. It's that bad. But I mean, Jesus, the America First contingent has to use any leverage it has to demand that this end as fast as possible. Because if they think they can get away with it, then they're just going to do it. And I really, actually, I'll be honest with you, man, I don't think they give a flying, you know, what the American people think or want. In fact, I don't know if you saw this, John Podhoretz, Norman Podhoretz's son. Norman Podhoretz is one of the arch neoconservatives at the beginning of the movement in the United States. Yeah. Some woman said, "Hey, Israel, I don't want any part of your war, and I'm not going to send my son off to die for your war either. Thank you." And then John Podhoretz quote tweeted that and said, "No one asked you, you piece of shit."
Jesus.
So that's, you know, that's quite frankly, that this is the attitude. They might not say, but here's the thing. There's this interview with Trump that came out yesterday from The Atlantic, where he said he invented America First, which is not true. This has existed for the better part of the 20th century before World War II. In the wake of World War I, this is a long-held tradition of whatever you want to call it, non-interventionism or isolationism on the American right. And it's something we all should embrace. It's a good slogan. And one of the best ways to sell, being anti-war to the American people is to say it's the most sane, beneficial policy for the health of our country. We can go through all the great libertarian arguments for that, but I think people understand. So he said that he invented it, and he says what it means. And he goes, so all the wonderful people who don't want war with a, or don't want to stop Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, that's not peace. Mm-hmm. So he's basically telling that base, fuck you. Because it's, I mean, there's the only way to interpret it. So I think it's like criminally irresponsible for people to pretend that he's America first or that he represents that anymore. This is the, I'm sincere, he's shaping up to be the worst president of my lifetime. And there needs to be a mass mobilization on the part of libertarians and conservatives. And, you know, I said as soon as the war started on Kyle's show, on the Kyle Anzalone show, the night of the attacks, that we should have done this over a year ago at least. But libertarians and Republicans, I know none of us really like joining protests. It's kind of an obnoxious lefty thing to do. Although, like I said, without reservation, I commend the college student activists for their bravery and their morality. However, we got to get out there either with them or in separate protests and demonstrate by putting ourselves out in the streets, not blocking traffic, but out in the public view, saying we're against this too. This is not a lefty issue. Okay. And we're not.
It's an American issue.
Yeah, exactly. And I hate to, I was almost said, we're not anti-Semitic. You don't have to say that. Fuck them. We are anti that. We're against this war. We want nothing to do with Israel anymore. We don't want to subsidize. We paid for 70% of Israel's war against the Gaza Strip, their genocidal project there, the war in the West Bank, the war in Lebanon against Hezbollah and the Lebanese people, the occupation of southern Lebanon, the occupation of southwestern Syria, and now their attack on Iran, which is designed to get, well, you know, this is either it's a, they're lying when they say they want to take out the nuclear facilities, and really what they're seeking is regime change and to just turn the country into Al-Qaeda Stan or ISIS Stan or whatever proxy forces they're going to unleash in the midst of all of this. That's another big shoe to drop, and turn it into a failed state like Libya or Syria. Or, you know, they really are going to bomb the nuclear facilities with the proper bunker busting munitions. And as I said, that can cause massive environmental catastrophes. So we need to be out there saying no to this. And again, it's, we have the final vestiges we have of freedom in this country are going to be, you know, torn apart. And it'll be a distant memory of this being anything approximating a free country if we don't do something fast. And yes, it has to be an America first thing and show that, you know, there's going to be pressure. Like I said, I don't know what leverage we really have politically because this is the second term, notwithstanding the promises of a third term or whatever. But we got to threaten impeachment or something, boycott the midterms. I don't know. But unfortunately, we're so locked in, and I get it, so locked into the domestic news cycle. And Americans are kind of like, you know, the one thing I benefit from is I focus exclusively almost on foreign policy. I'm interested in politics otherwise, but more or less the politics of foreign policy. It's what's most important to me. But a lot of people, it's like a goldfish, you know, because even like you're saying about the war in Ukraine, you'd think the America First base would be incensed over the fact that there's not been a deal yet, that we're still arming Ukraine, that we're still sending intelligence to Ukraine, that we're still spending all this money. But now we're going to be distracted with something else. If it's not the riots in LA and other cities, which I don't know how much of that is agent provocateurs meant to help bring in this new Palantir system or whatever, but you got that, you got, you know, Trump is a circus, right? I think Norman Finkelstein was making the case that, you know, he's kind of the perfect president for the Israelis because they like to do their worst war crimes when the Americans are distracted. And Trump is a constant circus. It's a clown
show. You can never, you can never keep up with it. To a point you were talking about earlier, who was I talking to about BRICS? It's not, I would be hesitant to believe, because everybody, as soon as something starts happening, people are like, oh, World War III. And I'm not saying that can't happen, it won't happen. But like, what I'm saying is, it's not necessarily 100% that like Russia is going to be right there to back Iran or China is going to be right there to back Iran. BRICS is essentially just kind of like a trading partner or trading partnership. Like these countries have close ties and everything, but it's not like they have a military alliance like NATO. Like people have this conception of BRICS in just the complete wrong way. And it's just that these countries are close friends and they want to have a good relationship because largely it's bolstering themselves against the West. And, I think what the tariff policy has largely been about has been, we're trying to see, like, from the administration's perspective, if they could choke out China by getting rid of their access to dollars. But what this is going to do is it's going to test China's fortitude about how they're going to survive, let's say, in the event of a war with the U.S. And I think they'll hurt, but I think the BRICS countries, you know, can probably survive off of, like, China will be fine without access to dollars, but they're going to basically just trade with all the BRICS nations. And now that Iran is, you know, now starting to get, now that they're in war with Israel, I'm kind of interested to see the position that China takes, because China, when it came to Gaza, they were helping both sides. They were sending aid to Israel and they were sending aid to the Palestinians, not like financial aid, but basically like medical aid and, you know, giving different supplies to both sides. I don't know if China is going to keep doing that, because China said that they want to see peace. I mean, that has largely been their policy. Even Ukraine, China was pushing for peace in Ukraine as well, because, you know, they have to import billions of dollars of food from the U.S. Well, there's lots of grain in Ukraine, so it's in China's best interest to have peace. So, you know, to bring it back to like the pivot to Asia and everything, China's not interested in any of this shit going on, because they don't, it doesn't help them to have war all over the place. Like, what are they going to do? Sell some more chips or something like that? Like, no, they need food. They want people buying their stuff. People aren't going to buy their stuff because they don't have ridiculous military equipment like the U.S. has. The U.S.'s incentive is to create war and destruction. China's incentive is to create peace. And I'm not saying that China's a benevolent actor and does sure. nothing wrong, but when you compare the U.S. to China, they have a lot more of an incentive for peace than anybody else in the world. And we completely did this to ourselves.
Yeah.
The U.S. has completely done this to themselves. And, you know, I was hopeful when Trump first came in, when he was saying, hey, we're having good relations and talks with China. But, like, it just seems like all these talks are just phony and, like, they're an about face. Like, it's just about, hey, look, we're doing something. All right. Is everybody done looking? All right. Well, minerals deal. Hegseth, you're going over to India and the Philippines, and, you know, we're going to renew these defense agreements with the Philippines to make sure, you know, tell China, hey, if you dare piss on a starfish the wrong way in Second Thomas Shoal, we'll blow Beijing right off the face of the fucking map. It's just absolute insanity, man. And like you said, the America First Coalition should be out there, and some of them are. There are some good America First influencers, like I would call maybe like Matt Walsh, Tucker, some of those guys, they're speaking out against it. So I don't know. I just hope, like you said, more people are like, no, we don't want to do this anymore.
It's funny to watch how they have to kind of dance around Israel.
Right. Yeah.
Especially Matt Walsh, man.
Yeah.
It's like watching every Twitter post about it is like a hostage video. It's like, I don't understand why we're doing this.
Yeah. But, wait, did Ben leave? What?
He's just
being held captive.
Runs to the bathroom quietly to post. You know, here's the other thing that's really dangerous, right? Is China imports a majority of its crude oil from the Middle East. So if Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz as a result of this policy, as a result of this war, well, what is China going to do? It's going to cause a major detrimental impact on their economy, at least in the near term. And they have a comprehensive strategic partnership with Iran. Now, Iran is a part of, as you say, BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They've been increasingly normalizing relations with much of the world, including in the Middle East. The three out of four of the Abraham Accords states, or not, I shouldn't say three out of four. Bahrain has not yet. There was, there seemed to be Russia was brokering talks that could lead to that outcome. But things have probably changed really since Israel's expansion of the war. But they certainly normalize relations with the UAE. They normalize relations with Morocco and Sudan. I guess, yeah, it is three out of four. They did normalize relations with Saudi in the landmark peace deal that China brokered in March of 2023. And there's been numerous instances. I mean, we've seen Saudi and Iran participating in military exercises together. Mm-hmm. The Saudis tried to warn the Iranians that Trump was going to countenance an attack, an Israeli attack on Iran, if they didn't ink a deal fast enough. They probably should have heeded that warning. Although, as you said earlier, it was really war or complete surrender. And Iran could not take the latter option. And figured maybe, you know, since, as you say, they have a history of restraint in it, and they do have they have a very good line of credit in terms of they are willing to negotiate and make deals, as we've seen with the JCPOA, and as we've seen, as I said, with more of these regional developments. The rest of the Middle East, yes, the Gulf sock puppet dictatorships of the United States, they're not good governments, to put it mildly. They've done horrible things, and I don't think we should be really. Look, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, considering their support for Al-Qaeda, but then again, that's Washington's bread and butter. But, they don't want this war. I mean, it's going to cause it's going to wreak massive havoc in their countries, because we have so many U.S. troops based in these countries that are going to get hit by Iranian ballistic missile fire. Their economies are going to get ripped apart. They're not going to be able to sell oil to the rest of the world. They're not going to be able to export their oil if the straits are closed. Mm-hmm. And we're holding the entire world hostage with our nuclear arsenal and Israel's. And so, you know, this is extremely precarious. And again, as you say, this is the fruition of our commitment to this policy of unipolarity. What the Russians and the Chinese want is a multipolar world. And increasingly, that's what the rest of the world wants, sans the West. I said sock puppet dictatorships in the Middle East, our sock puppet governments and nominal democracies in Europe, where we are committed to this policy of ruling the world. We sabotage any attempts by the United Nations to try and achieve a ceasefire in Gaza, or to rein in Israel at all. We've threatened to bomb The Hague and invade the Netherlands if there's going to be any sort of war crimes trials for American troops or the troops of any of our allies. And Netanyahu is meanwhile a wanted war criminal walking free. And as this goes on and on, whether it's the ICJ genocide case put forward by South Africa, the fact that the ICJ has said the entire Israeli occupation enterprise of Palestine is illegal, and that they call for the settlers to all evacuate from the West Bank and for the war to end in Gaza. Israel is a pariah state now. They're becoming increasingly isolated from the rest of the world, except the U.S. and its partners. And now, unfortunately, the Europeans have canceled the discussions that were going to be held at the UN about a two-state solution. And the U.S. was already pressuring Europeans to not engage and other countries to not engage in these talks. But now would be the right time to do that. But of course, the Europeans are cowards. But really, we are committed to vanquishing any potential threat. And this all goes back to the Wolfowitz doctrine after the end of the Cold War. We must maintain permanent supremacy in the world and maintain dominance over China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, Iraq, Germany, Japan, any potential adversary or near peer power. And we run the world. We're broke. We've blown all the goodwill we had built up over the years in the country, which is, it's interesting that it took this long, but we're increasingly isolating ourselves. And Trump is really an acceleration of all of this. I mean, I understand that there's arguments for the tariffs, although I think it would really, I mean, the working class would get,
they can't take much more. Yeah.
And so, but that's just another aspect of this Fortress America kind of mindset. And, we're tied at the hip with Israel, but we're exterminating the Palestinian people in front of the whole world. And so we're the greatest villains. We are the big Satan, if I'm being honest. And it's not going to be good to be an American anymore in the world. Right. And so it's getting to a point where the American people have to look for other options besides voting for a Democrat after a Republican has been in office long enough, and vice versa, because it's the same policy. It doesn't matter if it's Biden or Obama. They all have this same sort of heavily neoconservative influence policy of essentially dominance of the world, of full spectrum dominance, of benevolent global hegemony, as Robert Kagan and Bill Kristol would call it. And this is what has eviscerated our you know, any sort of sense of decency in this country. We have, you know, there's lawlessness running rampant. We're totally surveilled by the government. We commit torture. We commit genocide back to back in Yemen and Gaza. You know, all these wars across the Middle East backing terrorist groups that, you know, that have attacked Americans, like, you know, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS. Hey, thank you very much, Cliff.
Thank you, Cliff.
Likewise. And so it's, we've lost all of our credibility, including with the American people. You know, I mean, if you look at the polling, that those polls about the support for Israel, not just in the United States, but across the globe, you know, completely, you know, just as I said earlier, just going into the toilet. That is a reflection of the view of the American people, of the of America on the world stage as well, because we're implicated in every crime they commit. As I said, we paid for 70% of all of this shit, and 90,000 tons of weapons and military equipment we've sent to Israel just since October 7th, tens of billions of dollars, and only more to come. You know, there's going to be a massive bill coming down the pipe soon about how, well, we need to give Israel. I mean, by the end of this, we might be giving Israel a lot more than we even gave Ukraine. We've already given them adjusted for inflation, $300 billion since the Nakba and the founding of the state of Israel. You know, it's going to get a lot worse. And of course, they're criminalizing dissent. And really, I've said this before, I guess it bears repeating. What they're doing really is they're criminalizing empathy. You know, if you care about the Palestinians, you're an anti-Semite, which is ridiculous. Because the Palestinians are Semites, but they want you to be you're a Jew hater if you see the Palestinians as human beings, or the Iranians for that matter, or the Yemenis. And so I think what they're afraid of, and I think since October 7th, this has been a watershed moment in American politics and society. I'm sure it was certainly true for me, and I think for a lot of people, I look at everything differently now. That's the first thing that comes to my mind, is like anything the government's doing, I go, well, they're committing genocide in Palestine and now they want to do X. Like that's the defining characteristic of the American government today. Mm-hmm. And so if we're able to do something to stop that, I think because of our empathy for human beings at the end of the day, I think they're terrified of what we could do after that. Because if you start to care about the Palestinians, the next thing you might do is care about Iranians. The next thing you might do is care about your family and your neighbors and your community and your country. And then that is the end, really. Because, I mean, there's the popular will of the American people is not for all of this. It's for really, they have to spend so much time and energy and resources and money on getting us to even accept any of this, right? I mean, they are telling us, and I'm sure there's a huge amount of Americans that are, like, especially the older generations that are still watching TV, that think, yeah, an Iranian nuclear missile is headed for America.
I have a former boomer coworker that said, oh, the Chinese and the Iranians are coming after us. I'm like, man, boomers are down bad, bro. It's, believe me, it's not that serious. Neither one of them want it. And I think the reason why, and I know you could elucidate on this better than I could, the reason why Iran's always been so restrained is because I think they know if they were to fight a war with America, that it's gonna hurt. Like, they may come out on the other side, but it's not gonna be, you know, without blood, dirt, and bone being sacrificed. Dave had just wrote this story up, and we could cover this and then maybe we'll wrap shortly after a little bit of commentary on this. Okay. Yeah. About an hour and a quarter flew right by, man. Israel kills senior Iranian official who won the nuclear deal with the U.S. Ali Shamkhani, a top advisor to the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was killed in the initial wave of Israeli strikes on Friday. And whether Trump was in on it or not, I tend to think he was. This just says so much. And especially, like, even when you have Tulsi Gabbard, you know, saying that the Iranians aren't planning to make a nuke, like, who's been up, she explicitly says, a hawk on terror. They're not making a nuke. And then, like, all it would take is IAEA inspections. And I know, like, they've been a little bit of a, you know, thorn in the side of this whole situation, but, like, they've always been very open about what they're doing. They just want a civilian nuclear program. So in an interview with NBC News in May, Shamkhani said Iran was willing to recommit to its pledge to never build a nuclear weapon, reduce uranium enrichment, to low levels and get rid of its stockpiles of highly enriched uranium in exchange for sanctions relief from the U.S. It's still possible if the Americans act as they say. Sure, we can have better relations, Sean Connie said at the time. It can lead to a better situation in the near future. President Trump shared the NBC News interview on his Truth Social account, suggesting that he was open to such a deal, but the president demanded, or the president and his administration continued to demand that Tehran eliminate its nuclear enrichment program altogether, and condition Iran made was a clear non-starter. So, Trump celebrated the death of high-level Iranian officials following the initial wave of Israeli strikes. Certain Iranian hardliners spoke bravely, but they didn't know it was about to happen. They're all dead now, and it will only get worse. Trump has backed Israel strikes on Tehran, or on Iran, even though his intelligence agencies have affirmed there's no evidence Tehran is working toward a nuclear weapon, as we were just kind of discussing. Iranian officials have said they would further advance their nuclear program in response to Israeli or U.S. aggression. And really, I can't think of a better way, like a better incentive for Iran to want to make a nuclear weapon than looking at all the countries that have them and then being like, huh, the U.S. and their proxies never bother them. They leave them the fuck alone. So what does that tell Iran? Yep. Might as well make a nuke. We have a religious, like they have a religious pact to not make nukes.
Yeah.
But if you're going to get fucked with 24/7, eventually you got to decide, okay, we could have our religious convictions and die, or we could protect ourselves. And it still seems like they're not willing to go there, but they're certainly, you know, the Israelis in the U.S. are doing everything they can to push them there.
Yeah, ironically, the whole idea, the narrative about Iran is that they're effectively, there would be suicide bombers armed with nuclear weapons. But just the fact that they have said that we, like, you know, one of Khamenei's top advisors had said, the only thing that could make us rethink our commitment to not building nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, you go back to the Iran-Iraq war, where we were supplying Iraq with chemical weapons to bomb, to attack Iranian cities with. For almost 10 years, they never made chemical weapons in response. They never attacked Iraq with chemical weapons. They've had a fatwa under Khomeini against weapons of mass destruction, and it was and Khomeini recommitted to that in 2003, I believe. Now, it has been unanimous from the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus and their 2007 national intelligence estimate that Iran is not building nuclear weapons. That has never changed. Whether it was Biden in office, Obama, or even Trump, they all had to admit, as you say, Tulsi, Avril Haines, Bill Burns, the IAEA, which is the UN nuclear watchdog, have confirmed this over and over and over again. The Nuclear Posture Review, the National Defense Strategy, the Pentagon has admitted they're not building nuclear weapons, and that's son of a bitch, Hegseth, says, Lindsey Graham, yeah, I agree. They're headed towards something that could look very much like a nuclear bomb. So then everybody can run with that narrative because he can't legally, he knows he'll step in shit if he says that they are building a nuclear bomb. So something that looks like it. And then, of course, they run with the narrative that actually they are building a nuclear bomb by design. And it's a total lie. As I say, they have promised they won't enrich over 60% uranium hexafluoride. The only reason they have that, again, is because of the sanctions. They can't export it to France to have it processed into nuclear fuel for their energy program. So in the meantime, that was the leverage that they had. And I said this earlier before the war, actually after the war started, but it's still a good point. The proof that that was a good negotiation tactic is that at least there were direct talks between the U.S. and Iran. We may find out that the U.S. was and Trump was never sincere, and that's what my gut tells me. However, the fact that they were even able to do that, because all we had in under Biden were these indirect talks. Biden should have returned to the deal immediately. It was the best part of Obama's legacy. But of course, Sullivan and Blinken were committed to this policy of using Trump's sanctions as leverage to achieve what they called a longer, stronger deal, which was unnecessary. Yes, we know that Iran was not building nuclear weapons. Now they could race towards one, and they could. I should say they could. I don't want to say that they will. But yes, I mean this, and you see right there. I mean, he goes, the hardliners all dead. Well, that guy was not a hardliner. Okay. He was saying we will reduce uranium enrichment to 3.67%. Mm-hmm. We will stay committed to our historical pledge to never pursue weapons of mass destruction in exchange for sanctions relief, which they never even received under the original Obama deal. and they still remain in compliance. And technically, they are still complying with the deal. Articles 26 and 36 of the JCPOA, which Iran is still a party to, permit it to walk back its nuclear commitments under the deal if it is abrogated by the other parties. And in this case, the United States has 100% violated the deal. The United States is no longer in the deal. Again, Trump laid the groundwork for this war. It's his war, the same way it's now his genocide in Gaza. And, you know, quite frankly, his policy during the Trump years was to say that if the Palestinians, you're never going to have your own state. This belongs to Israel. In fact, Pompeo said, you know, that the illegal settlements throughout what he characterizes as Judea and Samaria, as the West Bank, are not illegal under national law. And that's a complete lie. There's no debate that the settlements are illegal. They're Jewish-only colonies in someone else's country. That's a permanent, an indefinite military occupation longer than the Soviet Union ruled Eastern Europe. And they're sending in their population to replace the population under occupation, the indigenous population of Palestinians. These are Muslims and Christians. We're exterminating a nation of Muslims and Christians for this fanatical, Jewish in name only Nazi regime, basically. And if Iran is going for a nuclear weapon as a result of this war, because it's an existential threat, pretty clearly, especially if the United States gets involved, they're not suicidal. They were not going to launch a nuclear weapon and cause a global nuclear holocaust. They want to protect themselves and avoid that outcome. The country I'm worried about using nuclear weapons more than anybody are the Israelis. And that is really the other problem, right? Is with the Samson option, we know that if we did put them in a position where either with sanctions or cutting off all military aid or no longer supporting them diplomatically at the UN and protecting them and their apartheid state, who knows what they're liable to do. And if we left them to fend for themselves, which according to top Israeli Air Force officials, if the US cut off aid to Israel, they couldn't keep this war going for more than a few months. So, you know, we don't know what the Israelis will do if they're backed into a corner, but it's getting to the point where we have limited options here. And this whole idea that Trump is saying that Iran and Israel should make a deal, and he's sending out so many mixed signals. First of all, that tweet Dave was quoting was insane. What the morning after the attacks, where he comes out and goes, yeah, the slaughter is going to continue and you're all dead and it's going to be more brutal and you better, you know, there's going to be nothing left and all this. And then he goes, but I'd really like to make a deal. They're still sending out all these mixed signals, not just to Iran, but also to the American people, which leaves us in a kind of paralyzed state where we don't know what to think. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. And it's just horrible. And so now he's saying, you know, they're killing top military figures. They're in Iran, now in Yemen. They're bombing Yemen. They're also they're killing diplomats and nuclear scientists and huge numbers of civilians already. So it is we're 100% at war we're de facto at war with Iran because of the Israelis. Now, I'm not absolving Trump of any blame whatsoever. I try to lead with the fact that it's his fault, that he owns this, and he should be impeached and he should be tried with war crimes, although we don't do that here. So he should go to The Hague is my position. This is 100% treason. I mean, we always talk about, and it's fair, Obama committed treason against the American people when he backed Al-Qaeda in Operation Timber Sycamore on behalf of the Israelis and our other partners in the region. Spent billions of dollars on that dirty war. And the byproduct was the Islamic State Caliphate, which we ended up having to provide assistance to the Iranians and air support to bomb it off the face of the earth in Iraq. We work with the Kurds in Syria to do that as well. But really, the Russians, Iranians, Hezbollah, and the Syrian Arab Army, and the Iraqi Shiite militias, the PMF, they're the ones that destroyed the Islamic State Caliphate, because that's what was in their national interest to do. In our national interest, it's to support the Israelis and Al-Qaeda. And as I try to say over and over again, you cannot wage a war on Iran and its so-called axis of resistance. Okay, this is Iran, the Shia militias in Iraq and Syria, the Houthis, Hamas to some extent, and the Houthis to some extent. You cannot wage a war against these forces without vastly empowering Al-Qaeda and ISIS, as we've seen in Syria, as we're now seeing in Gaza, because as Avigdor Lieberman, the former defense minister of Israel, is saying, Netanyahu is arming ISIS in Gaza. And I expect similar policies to be enacted in Iran. We've supported jihadist attacks on Iran, the Iranian people and Iranian military figures for decades, whether it's with the MEK or other groups. And so it's only going to get worse. And it's 100% treason. And this is Trump's history. You know, when he was committing genocide against Yemen for 4 years straight in his first term, that was entirely to the benefit of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and ISIS, which are virtually indistinguishable in Yemen. And they were part of the Saudi UAE coalition. And that's in the Associated Press. That's, you know, in the mainstream, throughout the mainstream media. There's no argument about that. So this is his MO, is to back Israel unequivocally or unconditionally and back Al-Qaeda, because Israel's enemies are Al-Qaeda's worst enemies in the region. And so this is how we've landed to where we are now, because we attack all the people that were ISIS's greatest enemies, from Hezbollah to the Houthis, to the Iranians, to the Assad regime or Assad government. And now this is, you know, this is what we can look forward to. And I expect for there to be a huge blowback in the United States and in the West, too. But we're going to see a lot of Al-Qaeda and ISIS attacks and other groups, and that'll only be used to fuel the war against their enemies. And that's the main grift here. I mean, that's exactly what they did after 9/11. We went after Saddam, we went after Gaddafi, went after Assad, went after Yemen. So this is the policy, and we desperately need to do something fast. I mean, I just, like I say, this is, frankly, I'm more scared about the outcome here even than the war in Ukraine. Because as you say, Russia is pretty restrained. Iran is pretty restrained. Israel doesn't know what that word means. Mm-hmm. So it's going to, and they at this point, they I think, you know, I was worried about this with Trump because I think the Israelis know there's really a ticking time bomb in the United States here. One, we could push ourselves completely into the financial abyss, the fiscal abyss, and no longer be able to maintain our empire, as Ron Paul has been warning about his whole career. Yeah. But also, the support for Israel is rapidly disintegrating in this country. And they need to, they have the older demographic that is still committed, almost as this kind of like religious fanatical virtue signaling in their support of Israel. You know, it's a mirror image of the worst aspects of sort of the woke hysteria, right?
Right.
And it's reinforced every day by the television news that they watch and the media that they consume. So they have a very limited window now to get this war wrapped up with Iran. But it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a catastrophe that is likely to dwarf the consequences of the last 24 years of carnage unleashed in the Middle East and Central Asia and North Africa by the U.S. government and their partners. And the only thing I can say is please call the White House right now, send them emails, tell them we don't want this war. It's going to cause massive American casualties, and we voted for America First. Give us America First. And I don't even know tactically if you should really attack Israel on those calls. Probably not going to do you much favors. So just make it about the American people, the safety of American troops, and the promise to pursue an America First policy. We want non-interventionism. We want peace and prosperity. You know, and like I said, please, I'm open to suggestions. I've been telling people, please tell me what the political strategy should be, because I think we've got to sort of subvert Trump on the American right. You know, you got to convince people that he's the enemy. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I'm kind of at a loss for what the other avenues are. You can only sort of play nice with this guy for so long. He just said in The Atlantic, fuck America First, really. I tell you what to do. Now obey. You know, so I don't know what you could do. Now, you could actually, you know what, by the way, if people want to run with the idea that he's being manipulated by Netanyahu and the Israelis, fine, do that, because that the outcome should be the same, right? It should be that we cut aid to Israel, or we use, mm-hmm. we leverage all this aid, financial, military, diplomatic, and otherwise intelligence to say, stop all of it now. And again, you know, we can go through this. We've done it before, but the 9/11 attacks were a direct result of very similar policies. The reasons given by Zawahiri and Al-Qaeda in their declarations of war against the Americans were, you're bombing Iraq from bases in Saudi Arabia on our Holy Land on the Arabian Peninsula. Your sanctions regime is killing hundreds of thousands of Muslims. And that's a Shiite supermajority country. So they were saying, even though we're Sunnis, we're coming after you for killing Muslims. And your support for Israel and their occupation of Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem, and your support for their war in southern Lebanon, and the brutality and the fact that you back these corrupt dictatorships in the Middle East. Now, they would have replaced it with something probably even worse, but it still stands to reason this support for Israel is what provokes attacks on the American people, which they're not aware about because we're constantly lied to. Israel is our greatest ally. And I just had a conversation with somebody recently where I said, we were talking about this, and they said, we're going to support Israel in this war with Iran. They go, well, aren't they the ones that always come to help us? No, there's no examples of that. There's not a single example. In fact, Netanyahu said after 9/11, this is very good for Israel. So, and keep your head on a swivel, quite frankly, for false flags. There's a lot of seeding we're seeing in the alternative media and the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Attacks are coming. Attacks are coming.
Sleeper cells.
Mm-hmm. Netanyahu even said something like that in his interview with Brett Baier today, where he's still running with the canard that Iran. He basically, he's doing what the Trump administration has done before they even took power, which is to conflate the two assassination attempts on Trump, which have nothing to do with Iran, mm-hmm. with this broader kind of, well, you have the intelligence, but I can't show it to you, plots that Iran has to kill Donald Trump. And of course, Donald Trump said, if they get me, what, we're going to wipe Iran off the map. So it's a nonstop deluge of propaganda. So please, libertarians, unfortunately, you're going to have to work with lefties on this issue because they're very solid on it. I am not talking about liberals. Liberals are hopeless. Ignore them. Okay. The lefty anti-war kids, and there's a lot of allies that you and I have in the media. We don't agree with them on everything, but we agree with them on war, the surveillance state, the police state, and that's all to the good. And there's a lot of things we agree with the right on. And I've been saying, look, libertarians, unfortunately, it's very difficult to sell a wholesale political philosophy to people. Okay. So maybe put converting people to libertarianism on the back burner temporarily and adopt a new strategy where we build single issue coalitions with anybody that's willing to work with us on the things that are important, because that's really all we have left right now. So I'm begging you, get Republicans to oppose this, get America Firsters, tell them, what did you vote for again? Because America First, right? And because it's very clear that they're being stabbed in the back. And, quite frankly, I grew up a war hawk. I grew up in a Fox News kind of household in the Bush era and hated Muslims and I wasn't a neocon. You can't, that's a very specific definition, intellectual definition. I was never a Trotskyite. And I don't take checks from Lockheed, but I definitely believe their propaganda. And it was Ron Paul and other people who basically told me, you're wrong about everything. And a million people are dead in Iraq. And ever since then, I've been on the right path. And so, unfortunately, we're going to have to do the same thing with these people. But I think when you are honest with people, instead of trying to coddle them or assimilate with them and sacrifice your own principles to, you might win friends, but you're not going to influence people. But we need to influence people. And so, begging you, please get out there and help us out. As always, the best place to go is antiwar.com every day. Dave DeCamp, Kyle Anslow, Will Porter, Jason Ditz, and myself, from time to time, putting out the most important information, simplifying it, going through all the mainstream media and sucking out all the propaganda for you so you can get just the truth. And then we have all the best op-eds and analysis for you every day that Kyle puts up there in the viewpoints section. Please check out the Libertarian Institute, where we cover all the bases for the entire libertarian movement, have the best team of podcasters and writers in the libertarian movement. And we'll just keep doing what we're doing. The most important thing Eric Garris, the founder of antiwar.com, always says is education, education, education. Mm-hmm. So help us out with that. And thank you so much, Kyle, for having me on. It was a blast and I can't wait to come back.
Yeah, man. Of course, you're always welcome. Well, let me knock out these two super chats and then, yeah, I'll give it the last word to you and we'll wrap up. Conrail, thank you so much for the $4.99. The problem with Trump is he tries to keep people guessing, but it's a gamble that will cost him in the future of America as we know it. Yeah, and I think that's exactly what happened with these negotiations. Him and Witkoff tried to jump all over the place, and it blew up in their faces. If you don't think AQ won't attack the U.S., Al-Qaeda, that is, won't attack the U.S. because we attacked the Shia country, people ought to read the grievances of bin Laden and the 9/11 hijackers. So, Conrail, thank you so much for the generous donations. I really, really appreciate it. Connor, you got any comments on that?
Yeah, sure. I'll just, because I should have mentioned earlier, the attackers on 9/11, these were Saudis, Egyptians, some from the United Arab Emirates, and I think the least of which, maybe it was one or two, were from Lebanon. But these are all essentially, I mean, we bomb Lebanon at, well, we support the bombing of Lebanon and the occupation of Lebanon at will, but we also fund their military. They're kind of a partner state, or they are a partner state in a sense. Saudi and UAE, these are effectively, these are our pet regimes in the Middle East, right? And Egypt as well. These were not people from Iran and Syria and Iraq. They were not Shiites. They were Al-Qaeda. They were the radical Sunni jihadists who the U.S. used against their enemies, the Russians, the Serbs, the Chinese, and the Shiite governments and allies and partners of Iran throughout the Middle East. So, excuse me, and of course, Gaddafi and other elements in Africa. So this is all blowback and all result of our policy, of our unconditional support for Israel, the world's most notorious apartheid state, formerly now the world's most notorious genocidal pariah state. And so cut ties with them immediately, demand nothing less. And I'm, you know, imploring you, please go to antiwar.com every day. It's the most important project on the internet. And, listen to Kyle's show, Conflicts of Interest, the Kyle Anzalone show. And we'll be continuing to work and doing the best we can. And thank you for all your support. And Pat, thank you so much for Kyle, thank you for having me back on so much. I really appreciate it. I was actually thinking I was going to shout out Pat. Pat's been busy with a lot of things right now. He's a very highly demanded lawyer. But, you know, he's always working on something important. So keep an eye out for it. And Pat McFarlane, ladies and gentlemen, who, by the way, you'd love, go through Kyle's archive here and watch all the shows he's been a part of here. He's the best. So thank you so much. And happy Father's Day, everybody.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for listening. I've worked very, very hard this week. I've been running myself rampant. So, I was glad Connor was able to come on last minute. Please make sure you go check out this past week's show. I had Gord McGill on Thursday night. And Tom Luongo on Wednesday night. People seem to really like the show with Tom. He was pretty spicy. And this week I got two podcasts coming up with you. Who the hell do I have on? You'll see it tomorrow, 5 till midnight, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Go subscribe over there. And new Common Crown music is coming at you soon. Lots of good stuff going on. I am just pulling what little beard, all the beard hairs out because I don't have any hair left up there. Insanely busy, but lots of good stuff going on. One more time, Conrail, thank you so much for the generous donations. Connor, thank you for coming on last minute, sort of. And everybody, have a good night. Be safe. And until next time, everybody, take care.
Take care, everybody.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.